please help me welcome our speaker tonight? We have Tim from the Conscious Contact Group in Doylestown.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Tim, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Tim.
It's great to be here. You guys hear me? I'm a low talker. Like a Seinfeld episode. How's it? You guys good? All right, thank you. If you don't mind, I'd like to start with a prayer, an offer of prayer for everybody. God, we miss you very much. We miss you more than our hearts can bear. And we're very lonely without you. And we want to come home. Thank you for the complete defeat. Thank you for the pain of the downward spiral. Thank you for bringing us all together in the path for seeking you. Thank you for the grace that you have given us so we can show others how to get to know you. May we all live in the present moment with you. Amen.
Amen.
Thank you. August 1st, 2017, God paralyzed the liar in me just long enough for me to see the truth. And he separated me from booze. It's a broken heart. It's an open heart, right? And he brought me to you. And I have a sponsor. I've gone through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been blessed with the freedom to stand before you in this emotion, in this breath, right now. Without wondering what I'm going to do in an hour, and who I'm going to call, and who's going to deliver the things that I want delivered. I thank you so much. Before I start talking, I want to thank AA. I want to thank what you have done for me, for who and what you are. You know, because I'm in debt to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm in debt to you. I couldn't possibly pay the interest on the principal on what you've done. Welcome to those on Zoom. What a gift. During the pandemic, we found alcoholics still found a way to get together and connect. Because that's what my ego doesn't want me to do. You know, my ego wants to separate me from you. It's going to separate from God. It wants me to be separate from the people that I love. He wants me to separate, my ego wants me to be separate from AA. And there's nothing worse than being alone, a nomad, as an alcoholic, right? You know, just being by yourself, pushing God away, pushing AA away, and I'm left to my devices. I'm supposed to tell you in a general way what it was like, what happened, what it's like now. First, if you don't mind, again, a story. There's a gentleman named Charlie, and he was a Navy fighter pilot, and he got shot down in the Korean War, and he was a prisoner of war for like 6 years, just brutal. And he finally got out by the grace of God. And he was having dinner with his wife a few years later. And this gentleman came up to him, and about his age, and he started talking to him. Hey, Charlie, how you doing? What's going on, man? You look great. You're alive. That's beautiful. But he knew all this information about, like, what he flew that day. It was on the Kitty Hawk, and knew the date, and he knew all this information. And Charlie had no idea about who this man was. He didn't recognize him. And the gentleman said, well, I packed your parachute that morning. hit Charlie. Like, I don't even know who this guy is. You know? This man has been packing my parachute every morning. Probably the reason why I'm still alive, and I don't even know his name. Because he was a flyboy. You know? And the gentleman that was packing his parachute was a sailor. So I guess the question would be, who packs your parachute? And throughout the story that I had throughout my life, I never knew who packed my parachute. You know? I didn't know that God was always with me. But I was separate from Him. Because I wanted to do what I wanted to do. I want what I want, what I want, right? And I'm gonna get it. And if you're in my way, you're voted off the island. I'll get it from somebody else. And that's how I live. I grew up in Mansfield, Pennsylvania. About a block away from Mansfield Catholic High School. My grandparents built a house there. My grandmother was an architect, and she was a draftsman. GE. You know, she's a pioneer. It didn't go on too much back in the day. You know, she had a corporate job. And my grandfather was an engineer. And he was a jazz drummer. He was a great jazz drummer. And we had, and he was a DJ for a record, for a radio station in Philadelphia. So I grew up like Killer Set of Drum, Slingerland, Radio King, Black Mother of Pearl. Any set of records, record collection, 78s, reel-to-reels. Since my grandfather was an engineer, he had all the top quality, you know, gear, Macintosh preamps, you know, everything was JBL speakers, and it was beautiful growing up. My mom was a single mom, and I grew up with my uncles. There was like seven of us in the house. And there was a Catholic family, Irish Catholic family. And there was stories, and there was religion, and there was music, and laughter. It wasn't always, you know, shits and giggles. But what's wrong with that? Right? Apparently I had a big problem with that. I thought that religion was weak. Weak. You need an external crutch. That's what I thought. Here I am, drinking and drugging constantly. And you're weak because you believe in something other than yourself. I remember, and all that, everything in the book that they teach us, all those disciplines and those values. And the beautiful thing about this book is that they're long-lasting values. They're values that's been around way before us, and they're going to be around way longer than us, right? And that way we can tap into that, into those long-lasting values. And I was taught this. You know, I was taught to be kind to people, to be considerate to people. I was taught to, when you make a mistake, that you own up to it. There is something bigger than you. Do you see all this out here, Tim? You didn't make this happen. You know? And that's how I was taught. Before probably I got on the bus to kindergarten, I knew most of this. And you know what I did? I pawned it. I pawned it to pay for the bus. Because I want what I want when I want it. But I'm not hurting anybody, right? So I started to drink. I was a late bloomer. Compared to my friends, I was about 17, junior in high school. And you know when you, I don't know, I've heard this in his room, his house. It was almost like a spiritual experience. All my problems and all the thing in my head and the fear that I walked around with. And I don't know why I had all that stuff. I didn't really have any reason to. I was grown up. I grew up with good people. But I blame them for everything. Because I want what I want when I want it. Right? And I just remember when I just left. I'm out, I'm gonna be a rock star. Because I became a drummer. I'm a musician. I play piano, I play four instruments, I'm a composer. I'm a creative soul. God has given me gifts and I never ever ever knew that. I never knew that I was given something. You know what I mean? I just took everything for granted. I know I went out into the world with this attitude as if I'm owed something, or that you owe me something, or that I can't get enough. There isn't enough alcohol to fulfill me. There isn't enough powdered alcohol to fulfill me. There isn't enough women to fulfill me. It just isn't enough. There isn't the ego. You can't satisfy the human ego. It's impossible. There isn't enough anything. That's the trick. It's a fixed fight. You know, it's like I've already lost. I fight and I fight and I fight and I lose every single time because I'm already lost, but it's a fixed fight, right? I'm always going to lose. Fast forward. And I'm in the hospital. And my mom is kneeling down next to me. And apparently I just tried to kill myself. Drinking sulfur. No idea how I got there. And she gives me that look. You know that look? Ever been given that look by your mom or your dad or your loved ones? Like that frustration and the confusion and the anger and the fear. And she said it to me. What's wrong with you now? When are you going to stop? Like, when are you going to stop? Well, I was drunk the next night. And I drank, and I drank, and I drank. And I traveled the country and played drums and piano and tried to be a rock star. And I was never about the music anymore. I don't even know if I ever was, really, you know? And I just, and my mom did everything she could in her life to sacrifice so I could have these things that I was given, you know? I was raised on love and understanding and compassion. And I never saw it because I can't see you. I can't hear you. I can't see you. I can't hear anybody. Because I have this myopic sort of obsessed mind that I gotta get what I gotta get. And now it's just so incredibly, just like I said, that laser-like focus, man, I just couldn't stop. And I'm just brushing life by. I'm pushing everybody away. And everyone who tried, it's amazing, you know, I never could. I only listened to the people that would harm me. You know? Like my dealer, the bartender, you know, the friends, which is really there because I got what I got. I'd listen to them as if their word is gospel, you know. But my mom came, or my uncles, a friend of the family, which I can't tell you how many times I've been talked to about, if you need help, then we'll help you. Can't hear it, man. I'm good. I'm fine. Everything's cool. I just need to chill. I always just need to chill. You know what I mean? Now, 20 years, I just need to chill. Right? You know? I remember just, I tried 3 times a year to stop. That was for like 10 years. You know, the routine. Here comes Christmas. I'm gonna hold off until like New Year's. Hit it hard. Going to hibernate. medication for 2 months. And get well for like a month, and then stop. Here comes St. Patrick's Day. Hit it hard again, right? And that's, you know, March, April, May, chill out for June, July. You know, here comes 4th of July. And that's what I did. For years. I could never stop. I can't stop. I don't have the power to stop. I don't have the ability to stop what I'm doing, even though I know it's killing me. And it's killing everyone around me. You know, it's amazing that what this disease does to not just your soul and your body and your mind, but to people that you drag through the mud and through this. And I did that for years and years and years. And I would always make exceptions to my rule because I'm Tim. I want what I want, what I want. Well, it got to the point where, and I'm not a rehab guy. I did it one time. I went to Penn Foundation for outpatient, excuse me. I just needed again to chill. I just needed to chill. And that's all that was. That was for my mom. I was doing it for my girlfriend. I wanted her back. Honey, I love you. So I went to rehab. That will show you how much I love you. But I just hit it, and I just remember. And we'll fast forward a little bit. I'm up for 3 days. I'm like 170 pounds at the time. And I remember being in my apartment. Now I'd hide my bottles. I never hide bottles. I live by myself. Who am I hiding the bottles? My friend. You know, somebody might come over. And then the phone would ring. Oh my God, the phone would ring. And I remember looking in the mirror. I remember this like it was yesterday. And I'll never forget this. This is what... And I'm looking in the mirror, and I'm 170 pounds, and I'm just... crying, and I'm quiet, and I'm looking at myself, and I'm saying that question that I've asked myself a million times: what's wrong with me? And I went in the studio, and I got on my knees, and I looked up, and I said, God, whatever you want me to do, I will do it. I can't do this anymore. And my sponsor always told me that his favorite 2 words when he hears an alcoholic talk is the word amen. Right? Because you always know when you hear and then, that here comes God coming around the corner. You know? And then, this really interesting thing happened, and I don't know how to explain it other than I just ran out of myself. Like I ran out of Tim. You know? And I knew at that moment, and forgive me for my English, but I can't say it another way, I just knew I was bullshit. I'm full of shit. I'm playing this part. I'm not who I am. I'm not who I say I am. I crawl into your head and I look back at me and that's how I think who I am. Right? I don't know. That, the way I think of me is the way you think of me. Right? And in that moment, man, like, the thing happened. The thing that I can't explain. If I try to explain it, I'm selling it short. But what I can tell you is that something turned on and then something turned off. You know, as a musician, when you play on stage, or you play in the studio, you have to kind of lose yourself and find yourself at the same time. You have to kind of like turn the head off, but your body kicks in. You know, your muscle memory. So you can do what you have to do, but I can't think about it like tying my shoe. If I think about tying my shoe, I get into a rule. But that's what it felt like. It felt like everything was going to be okay. And I never, ever felt as if anything was going to be okay. Like it was a nightmare, externally. 2 DUIs. I just got fired from yet another job. Financial ruins. I owe creature. But everything was going to be okay. And that's that. That's what I got. And it was odd. And I'm like, okay. And I got up. And I hit the phone. I knew the gig was over. And I Googled meetings near me. And Mansfield Clubhouse came up. And probably passed out after 3 days. Probably should shower. And if you go into the clubhouse, you have to kind of go down this hill and into the vestibule into the meeting. And I remember going down the vestibule and I closed my eyes because I was full of fear. My head was on fire. You can't see it, but my head is on fire, right? And I close my eyes and I hear some really strange noises. I hear laughter. And then I hear someone say, thank you so much for sending me flowers to my grandmother's funeral. And I see two people hugging. And I'm like, where am I? I think I'm in an AA meeting. I think I'm in the wrong place. I'm at an AA meeting. You know, I'm thinking everyone's going to look like me if somebody just shoved a puppy. That face, you know what I mean? And I looked, and it was peculiar, but I felt like it was the first, I didn't know it then, but if I look back on it, I can see it, I can feel like that was probably the first time that I realized this wasn't about drinking. Like, this is about living. This is about living life. You know, this isn't, like, I had no idea what it would be like to live life without drinking and drugging. It didn't seem possible. It didn't seem like it would. How am I going to live? What am I going to do? What do we do? Cards? Like, I don't get, like, I don't understand how that's going to look like, right? We think so small. You know, we think so small. I think so small. And I remember sitting in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I sat down. This is my first meeting. I've never, like I said, I did the IOP one time. And I wasn't present, man. I don't remember a thing. I didn't care. And I remember sitting down, and you guys did this unbelievable thing. You started talking about how scared you were when you were out there. You started talking about how you kept, you know, you kept letting everybody down that you loved. You talked about how incredibly obsessed you were. And you started talking about how I felt. Now, I didn't know anybody knew how I felt. I never experienced anyone verbalizing what was on the inside of me. And you were saying it. And I thought, you know, everyone's in this room right now. Think of all the millions of things that happened to every single person in this room right now and how you got here. Like all the things that's happening for you to get in this chair right now. And I had nothing to do with it. There's my second step experience. There must be something greater than me. Because we're all here. And I had nothing to do with that. I never thought that before. And it hit me. That's not me. That's God coming through the door, man, again. Giving me into his thought. I came to believe at a meeting because I saw you. What a gift, right? Just being open to it because I was ready, man. I was ready for whatever you were going to tell me to do, I would have done it. I was ready to take direction. I was done fighting. I put my sword down. It was over. And acceptance started coming through. You know, and that first step experience was working me, right? I can't work the first step. It works me. I have to experience in my heart. I have to concede. What does concede mean, right? It means to surrender with a fight. And that's what I did. You know, alcohol was my first love. How am I going to let go of that? So of course I'm going to be fighting. I can't even let go of a bad relationship.
I'm going to let go of alcohol?
But I was ready, man. I was so ready. And I got up for the meeting, and this gentleman came over to me. Sorry. And he gave me one of the biggest presents I've ever received. He said, "Hey, man, you look like you use a big book." And he gave me this book, this one right here. And then he gave me the second greatest thing I've ever received. This is not a number. He said, "Call me." That's all he said. And I only heard his voice for some reason. And that, you know, I don't even, like his tone of his voice, I could hear. And that was the only voice I could really tap into for some reason at that moment. And I called him and I asked him to dance. You know, which is what I feel like I'm wearing now. This is how I was dressed when I asked him to dance. He said yes. And then a week later, I was knee to knee, you know, with this man who I don't know him, but when I saw him, I knew he wasn't like me anymore, but he was at one point, you know? Like that when the book talks about that confidence that we gained with each other, because I knew he knew him. I knew him and he knew him. And God is the great choreographer. He puts us together. Who's going to carry that message? You know? And I can tell you that on that day that I started working with him on the steps, and we went into it right away. He's like, "Man, there's only one way we're going to do this, and this is the only way that I know how to do it, which is the way I was shown." And he said, "Open up the page." He says, "See that page? There's nothing on it." He said, "Yeah." He's like, "Write, 'I, God, or die.'" Shit got real. But he was serious, because he knew that was the truth. If I don't find God, I'm going to die. There's no human power that's going to save me. I'm not going to be able to do it. And I can tell you on that day that I've never felt that hopeless again. I never felt that belittled. I never felt like it was... It immediately started to sink in that what this man was reading to me in this book was me. Like it was written to me almost. That's what it felt like, you know. It's like the book comes to where you are, you know. And it felt like I was, like this book was written for me. And we were right into it. And I remember that we went, like, you know, the black print on the white pages on this blue book, we went line for line, word for word. There's no microwave in fly into. I just wasn't, that's not what he does, that's not what we do. There's no, I'm not in a debate society. He just knew that that's what I needed. I needed to be, because what I'm doing is I'm having these experiences and these consciousness pops and these things that are happening to me as the book is being read to me. I'm learning who I am and what I am, because I don't know that I'm an alcoholic. You know, I didn't know that this is what I was. I didn't know that it was of a threefold disease of mind, body, and spirit. I didn't know that the solution was alcohol. That was my solution to everything. And it's time to start living in the solution and not living in the problem. And if I went to the third step, the decision is, it's Latin for scissore. It's to cut away. It's like an incision you make. A surgeon make an incision. The decision is to cut away. And to what? To cut away the alternative. Right? Because I'm either going to live on a spiritual basis, or I'm going to die and I'm all of that. There's my option. And it's because of my will, because I think I know better. I know what you need. I know what I need. Do you ever get global? You know what's good for the species. You know? And I need to turn that over to a power, because lack of power is my dilemma. I have to stop blaming God. So anyhow, I always blame God, but I didn't believe in. How do you blame something that you don't believe in?
I don't know.
It's amazing how we are. I'm so happy how wrong I was, guys. You know, I was so wrong about everything. I thought I knew everything about everything, and you know what? I didn't know nothing about nothing. I really didn't. And we sat down in the prayer, went to the third step prayer, and I got up and I had another experience there. And again, I got closer, and I got closer, and I got closer, and I started to. You know, there's things that anxiety started to quell. I started to believe in something. I started to understand enthusiasm. You know, I started having enthusiasm for life again. You know? Enthusiasm is a Greek word for entheos, which is the God within. So if you're enthusiastic about something, that's the presence of God in your life. You know? To be excited about something, to be enthusiastic, man. Come on. Because I don't want to die. What do you want me to do? And we did it. And we went into the inventory. You know, there's this Carl Jung in her book, the great Swiss psychiatrist. He had an axiom, like a spiritual axiom. Cleanliness in inventory. And what that means is that what you need the most will be found where you least want to look. Because going through an inventory and all the things I was being asked to write on this paper, I never wanted to look at. You know, I wanted to stuff that away, pretend like it didn't happen, re-gift. You know, I didn't want anything to do with that. But it's time to look God in the eyes, and he said, you know, because if you're the only one talking, you're only going to learn what you already know. And you better just shut up, because you're so full of yourself that you can't even see 2 inches in front of your face. And that's right. And I did it, man. And because that's what's blocking me. The very thing that's going to save me, the very thing, this power that they keep talking about, the power of God, that wants the best for me, a loving God, right? I'm blocking it with all of this stuff, all this resentment, and all this fear, and all this sex conduct, and my relationships. And again, I have to be unlocked in order to get to this power. The only thing that's going to keep me sober, it's in the way, and we got to get it out of the way. Sponsor would tell me, you just gotta unblock you, dude. You know, you're blocked. And it worked. It worked. It's so simple. It's mind-numbingly simple how we do this. You know, who you're mad at. You know, and by the fourth column, you realize I made everything up. Look at another hand. 25 years of walking around drinking these stories, thinking that it was my grandfather's fault. It never happened. I made it all up, most of it. And the things that I didn't make up, you know, if you didn't say hello to me when I was 6 years old, you know, you abandoned me. Like, we're so extreme. And, it's just such a gift, man, to be free. This is an opportunity to be free, you know? There's a story about a Chinese farmer that has like this meager piece of land, right? So he has one possession, he has a horse, and he has a family, and he's allowed to live on this meager piece of land on this farm that's owned by this lord. And the only way he can stay there is by tying the crops in and farming every single day. And one day, the horse runs off. Now he's lost everything. His family, his friends come over and they console him. And they say, man, this is awful. This is terrible news. He's like, maybe it is. Maybe it isn't. I don't know what. You just lost everything. A couple of days later, the horse comes running back through the corral with a herd of horses behind. Now he's the richest man in the valley. And of course, everyone comes over and they console him. Oh, this is awesome. This is great. You know, you got to get back and you're wonderful. He said, maybe it is. Maybe it isn't. What? A couple of days later, his son, his only son, is trying to break one of the wild horses. He gets thrown off the horse, breaks his legs, paralyzed. And everyone comes over and does the same thing, insults him. This is terrible news. This is a real tragedy. And he says, maybe it is. Maybe it isn't. And about a week later, the Chinese army comes through the valley and orders every young man to go to fight in a battle that no one will survive. And they can't take the kid because he's paralyzed. See, the old man knew. The only thing he ever had to surrender was his will. He didn't have any judgment on his life. He just had experience, you know, and all these things that I couldn't see. I was looking at everything wrong because I could only see it in the negative. I can't see that what God is doing is he's placing these people in these situations and these experiences in my life because what's around the corner is the plan. There's a plan that I can't see. And if I don't know what's going on, you ever freak out because you don't know what's going on? I don't know what's going on. And I just don't know what's going on. Like, I have to know, right? But the truth is, I just don't know what's going on. And I'm much more comfortable now not knowing. Because the greatest thing you'll ever know is you'll never know. And that's real freedom. Like, I don't have any opinion on my life. I don't have any judgment because God has a plan and I don't know what that plan is. So let's just show up and let's align myself with His will so I can be led to where I'm supposed to be because I was always where I wasn't, you know? And these are the gifts. And going through this inventory, I get to see all of the harms and all the things that I've done to put brick walls in front of every one of you. And all the people that I love. My mom told me, she told me like about 6 months before I got sober that she said she was planning my funeral. She was serious. Like, a parent shouldn't have to say that to a child, you know? And I'm doing it to her. I'm the one making those reservations. So the freedom of this and to see what I've done is, you know, it was an extremely powerful experience, but so, like, the freedom of that, the liberation to be able to see finally, now I can see you. Now I can see what I'm doing. Now I can see that there's an opportunity here for me to love you and to know what that really means. Going through 6 and 7, asking God to remove all of our defects. Because I can't remove them myself. I can't fix me. That's the whole point. If you notice 6 and 7, very, very small in the book. Not much there. It's huge though, because this is where God's supposed to come in. This is where I ask God, you know, I humbly ask God to remove my shortcomings. Grant me strength as I go out to do your bidding. And what better way to go out to do his bidding? And he'll knock on people's doors that I harmed, you know, the wrongs that I write, and knock on their doors. And I can assure people I've had experiences in this room with amends. People I've been looking for years pull up right next to me. Wrong. There's a buddy of mine that we played in a band together. We actually went to, a pain big band, actually he wanted me to play drums for him. And I didn't show up for the rehearsal because I was on mushrooms for 3 days. It's always a good idea. and I have a song, you know. And when we're doing this list, this
was harmless, you know. I remember Brian. I gotta get a hold of Brian. I sent an email out to the email that I only know. It wasn't the right email, apparently. But like a year later, after doing this, he pulls up right next to me. But it's Chick-fil-A. I don't eat Chick-fil-A, dude. Like, it's not what I don't do. You know, it's like I was in a studio session and I was hungry and I just pulled into this place I never go to and he pulls right next to me and I see him and we hug and make the amends there and I ask that question, that great question, what can I do to make it right? And he said, I need a percussion player at the church. Sure, man. Now, I don't go to church. I don't know anything about it, you know. And I said, yeah, absolutely. And I walked into that place, and I was hugged. That place hugged me, like you guys hugged me. Like it was very similar, that unconditional love, like what AA does, man. Like no matter how bad I did, no matter how many people I wronged, no matter how many times I burned my life to the ground, you guys still hugged me when I walked in this door. Just thanking me for being here. And if I wasn't doing well, I just said, keep coming back. You know? And I didn't know that. And it was amazing. And now I met one of my closest friends in the world. I'm now a worship leader in that church. And I don't know how that happened. You know, I don't know how I got to a guy that wouldn't even put me anywhere near your children. Because he didn't trust me. And now I'm worship leading in a church that it's just amazing what this program does. And it's not about what I have, and it's not about the things that I'm receiving, and it's not about those. It's about getting closer to people. It's about God removing those brick walls, you know, and me getting closer to you. And about connection, and that's what I searched for my whole life, and all that stuff, and everything that I'm looking for something. Do you ever feel like you just were like, I don't know what it is I'm looking for, but I'm looking for something? Do you know what it is? You know what I'm looking for? I'm looking for God, and He's right here. I'm thinking it's in her, and that bag, and that bottle, and that vacation, and that car, and it's right here, man. The whole time it was right here. And that's what you showed me. I'm forever grateful for that. And, you know, my sponsor says if you don't have time to pray, you're certainly going to have a lot of time for misery and sickness. So, I always ask him, why do we get on our knees and pray? Because that's how you got here, man. So why don't you get on your knees and show God some humility? Because remember when that happened, when you showed Him humility, He removed a deadly obsession from you. So maybe He can take all your character defects from you too. And that's what happened. I started to, and it wasn't like He, if you have problems with, let's say, impatience, He's going to put someone in your life that you have to be, learn how to be really patient with, right? Like, it's in the seeking, you know? My sponsor always told me that I'm going to train your feet to move against your head because your feet will save you and your head will kill you. And this group is called Feet First, right? You know? And it's true. Like when I'm not feeling good in the meeting, I can feel myself get the cars and you know, get the keys, and I don't want to go, but my butt gets in the car and I'm out the door. Because that's how I was trained. You know? But I'm going to tell you that probably the most profound experiences that I've had is in working with, you know, carrying this message with sponsees. Being with sponsors, actually. My sponsor always says, we sponsor sponsors. You know, maybe they're not there yet, but they're going to be.
And the reason why he was showing me what he showed me into this book, so you can get out there and carry the message of hope and maybe help an alcoholic that was dying, just like you were when you walked in this door. And what a gift that we get to do that. And I'll tell you that there was nothing more profound than watching another man, lights go on. You know, watching them, their life come back in their eyes. You know, it's always in the solar plexus, right? You know, it's always in the eyes. And you can see them just grow in front of you. And the miracle of God is in front of me. And I'm just a conduit. I'm just a liaison. At best, just for servants. You know? I was told that, you know, AA is the only place we all come in as big shots and we work our way up to servant. Because that's the highest moon. You know, that's the greatest honor is we can be servants. We can help each other. And that changed me, man. That changed my heart. Watching the miracle of God in front of you. Not only what I experienced, but what I'm watching other people go through in this program. And watching the miracle, you know, and you know, it's such in my old, you know, part of London, you know, there's a Catholic district, and they actually have gas lamps. And there's a lamplighter that goes around and actually lights all the lamps. And from the Tower of London, you know, it's very foggy in London. You can't see the lamplighter, but you can see just the lights go off. Right? Just, I can't see the lamplighter, but I can see the lights go off, and that's kind of like what it's like in here. You know, I can see where God, I can't see God, but I can see where God has been. You know, and the lights just keep going on and on and on and on. It's beautiful, man. I want to thank Mike T for asking me to be here tonight, man. And Mike, it's been great. Mike, thank you. I really appreciate you guys inviting me into your home. Because AA is a big family, and I feel like you've invited me in your living room, and I really appreciate that. And thank you for putting up. This is my first hour speaker meeting. I've never spoken out, so thank you for dealing with me on this one. So, but thank you so much, guys, and love your company.